Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. With me is Steve.
Hey, hello, John. Good to be with you, as always.
Yeah, how are you doing? No COVID-19. Happy 1 year, by the way, of not getting it, apparently.
Oh my God, that's really flown by. The best year ever, 2020.
Yes, right. I love the March memes. Is it March again? It seems like it's always March. But yeah, it has been a year, unfortunately. Well, the fortunate part is there's been a lot of innovation in fintech to help people along. I've been getting kind of good press for that. One thing I noticed that there's a lot of new, these interesting words that I hadn't obviously studied in school. One of them is embedded finance. Did you ever?
Oh, interesting.
That's kind of relatively new with fintech, yeah?
Is that like financing from your bed?
It's financing. They give you loans to buy those fancy online mattresses. Well, fortunately, we have someone that actually knows what embedded finance is. We have Rob Stratoff, the CEO of Liberis. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, John. Amazing to be here. And I can definitely tell you what embedded business finance is.
Great. We have the right person. Yeah, it's great you're here. You know, just another former cheesemaker turned fintech entrepreneur. Can you tell us, what is embedded finance?
I'm glad that the Dutch cheesemakers have spawned so many successful entrepreneurs in embedded business finance. I don't know too many in the industry that actually have the same backgrounds, but I'd love to meet a few and trade cheese secrets with them.
Well, they all make good guests, so great to have you on.
Thank you. Brilliant. So. Liberis is a leader in embedded business finance, and we are global. We operate globally with offices in Europe, UK, and the US. And to me, embedded business finance or embedded finance is making use of an existing ecosystem where you provide finance to customers who don't have to go outside of that ecosystem to either be approved or to actually take out funding. So. We support the world's largest technology companies, e-commerce platforms, payment processors, and also banks to provide business finance to their small business customers. And the way that we do that is we connect our platform through a single API, and that makes that our partners can provide finance under their own brand. So it's a white label proposition. And that allows their customers, their small businesses, to get funding from a source they already know and trust. And we take care of the entire process for that partner, from marketing to funding to the whole funding process behind it and renewing the customers. And having embedded finance at the center of that ecosystem means that customers can take out that funding where they interact already. It means they don't have to apply for funding. We already have pre-approved them. And it means that they can actually do what they do best, which is running their businesses.
So it makes it completely invisible for the customer, and that's what makes it embedded finance. It's you go to the store, you make your purchases, get your financing, and you're done.
Exactly. So if you look at some of the bigger names in embedded finance, I'm thinking about a Klarna. I think Klarna is a brilliant company. Huge potential as you can see in both their amount of customers that they've gathered over the last year throughout COVID. As well as their valuation. They embed themselves in the checkout process of e-commerce websites and businesses and provide three installments lending or installment lending to their consumers. Now, we do something similar with, for example, the likes of an FIS or Worldpay, where we embed ourselves into their ecosystem. We provide a small business the opportunity to take out funding at the point of interaction. So, to give you a bit of a customer journey here, let's say that you're you run a cheese shop, one of my favorite shops to run. You run a cheese shop on Main Street, and have a huge opportunity of actually buying £10,000 worth or $10,000 worth of cheese from a factory or a farm, and you're in desperate need to get that ASAP sorted. Now, what we have already done with our partner is we know your data, we know your transaction history, we know how you've performed. We've already pre-approved that customer for, let's say, up to $25,000 of funding. They just log on to their dashboard. They see you are, you know, dear John, you are such a great customer. You are pre-approved for $25,000. He thinks, oh, I need $10,000. That's great. Click. You know, look at the terms. You know, let's say $25,000 at you know, 8 or 9%. Brilliant. I'll take it out. And you know, within 10 minutes, 26 seconds. That's the fastest we've transferred into someone's account. Money hits the account. He can buy the $10,000 worth of cheese. And then whilst he sells that cheese, we collect it back as a percentage of his revenues. So that means that all the repayments are linked to the daily cash flow of the shop or of the business. And that is incredibly intuitive in terms of payments to small businesses, which means they never have to think about the month end, you know, I need to pay £1,500 or $1,500 back to the loan. And that's one of the, you know, the biggest shifts in funding that we've seen over the last few years, which is revenue-based finance. And we combine embedded finance with revenue-based finance, getting the best of both worlds.
Interesting. So does that mean that consumers then have a profile on the Liberis platform so that they can be pre-approved for stuff, or do you underwrite them as they come to the merchant?
That is a great question. So the way that our technology works is we have a single API that pulls the data from our partner platform. Now, let's say that partner provides on a daily basis or a weekly basis, they provide all the transaction history of their customers, fully anonymized. And we have up to about 12 what we call golden standard data points that we do our underwriting on. And that can be, you know, how long have you been a customer of this partner? How quickly is your inventory turnover? All these kind of items that are highly correlated with someone's credit score. Now, we pull all that anonymized. And once someone then wants to, you know, comes to the website, they see a pre-approved offer based upon that anonymized data. Now, with that anonymized data, somebody says, I'm very, very interested. John says, I'm very interested in $10,000. Click through. At that point, somebody authorize us to actually pull the data, both from the partner as well as from external data sources. So we augment the partnership data with bureau data, with open banking data, with CIFAS data, and of course KYB, KYC, and AML, and we make them a fully pre-approved firm offer on the spot. Now, all that takes 1.2 seconds, so it's incredibly quick through our algorithm. The customer is 99% sure that whatever offer we have put in front of them, they can actually take up. The 1% where we don't fund it is if there's an AML or KYC hit. In that case, of course, we need to do extra checks to make sure that we can disperse the money. Now, the way that we've developed this is, we are now at version 3 of our underwriting algorithm. And what we've built with Liberis in our platform is what we call an internal performance data or an internal performance data engine that pulls that data, analyzes it, make sure that we bring an offer to the right customers. So, you know, out of 100 customers that that a partner has, on average, we can pre-approve about 80% of those, so 80 of those customers. And the other 20 customers, we can provide a digital ad that says, look, you're unfortunately not yet eligible for business finance, but keep trading and, you know, hopefully in the future you will become eligible. So what we do is actually we bring positive selection to our partners rather than negative selection. And that's incredibly powerful from a customer experience as well.
So you operate, you're based out of the UK, of course, but do you also operate across Europe?
Yeah, correct. So we have operations in Sweden, in Finland, in Prague, in Czech, Slovak. We are in the UK and in the US. And as of next week, we will be live in our seventh country in Denmark. And this year, we will look to launch in another 2 to 3 European countries as well.
Any interesting differences between operating in different countries that you've noticed?
I love that question because the answer is yes, massive differences actually. Especially now that we're into lockdowns, there are some incredible insights into the countries from a underwriting, from a credit performance. and from a payments perspective, of course. So what you see is not only can we see the shift from brick and mortar or offline to online real time, because we get on a monthly basis, we get more than a million customer records or transaction histories from small businesses through our partners. So we can see that shift happening very rapidly. But we can also see exactly by country what the impact is of the lockdowns. So in Czech, who unfortunately is going through a third big wave of COVID at the moment, we can then see that the lockdown is having an impact of about 40% less transactions in brick and mortar, but you see a 20 to 30% increase in e-commerce. And similar in Finland, they've managed to not be in a lockdown for a long time. Unfortunately, at the moment, they're back in a lockdown, and you can see that same trend happening. And in the UK, you can see that the lockdown, we're now coming out of the lockdown, you see some upticks in transaction histories happening again, which is incredibly insightful from a data perspective. But what is even more insightful is we have the ability to actually check which of these companies do we think are not going to keep trading anymore post-COVID. And we can use the data sets from countries that have come out of those lockdowns. We can use these data sets and extrapolate or interpolate them on the data of other countries, which is incredibly useful for our forecasting.
I've also noticed here that as part of the Liberis suite of products, you also provide small business funding. Did you take part in the UK response to the whole COVID-19 thing with CBILS loans? And if so, what was your role in that, and how much business have you done with that?
Great question. We were we are actually the only revenue-based funder in the UK that is that has a funding facility from the British Business Bank, from the UK government-backed business bank. With that comes some great great funding facility, of course, and the understanding of what is necessary for small businesses to succeed. But it also brought us, quite a step up in terms of providing small businesses with the government scheme. So, as you said, Sybil's coronavirus business interruption lending scheme, that was actually one of the biggest programs run in the UK for small businesses to take out much needed funding to keep going throughout the pandemic. Now, in addition to that, there was also the bounce back scheme. Which is for smaller businesses to just take out up to £50,000 of funding to help them support through the situation. So not only in the UK, we were one of the very first businesses to actually be authorized for that. Also in the US, through the PPP program, the Payment Protection Program, we participated in that, and we supported many businesses. With that came incredible customer feedback as well. And one of the big pieces of customer feedback was from a company in the US that's called Jet's Pizza, where the owner called Nick Woods, he got funded throughout the pandemic to help his company not only survive throughout the pandemic, because he has 50% lower revenues, but also help him set up the pizza delivery operations much better. Make sure that he could pay his staff, make sure that he could keep his company. So we saved a lot of jobs there instead of being forced to shut down. I think the best comment that I got from him was, "You are a small business's rock," and that's incredible and incredibly humbling as well to get the feedback. You've saved all of our livelihoods. You've saved my job, my wife's job, and also 22 employees. I think that's the sole reason why we kept going for the past year.
That has to be quite rewarding. So, as you mentioned in the intro of the show, you actually have an interesting background. You came from you were raised on a cheese making farm, and then you got into fintech. What was that journey like?
Look, I come from a very small town in the Netherlands, and I'm still very proud of the little town. And so basically my family have all been in cheese and have cheese shops and sold cheese. And my brother is still running that my parents' company now. The great name it translates in English into Cheese Palace, which I absolutely love. My parents back in 2000, as a family company. My parents are always in the shop, of course, or in the company. I was just starting to study at Erasmus University, when both my dad and my mom were both in hospital with two separate illnesses. But for my dad, it took quite a few months before he was back onto his feet again. You know, the only two people that could run the company at that point were my brother and I. So, you know, together he was 16, I was 18. We had to run the company, have quite a few employees that we were responsible for, making sure that all of a sudden there was no safety net anymore. It was us running the company and doing our studies, which was quite a challenge. But I learned a lot from that, especially what not to do. After that, we set up together a platform to do lunch catering, lunch delivery, basically to businesses. So we had Nittal Steel, we had some of the Shell offices, some of the local fire stations and police stations. They were all ordering their lunches through us. And ever since, I thought, look, I really want to just run a business. It's absolutely great experience. Well, in the meantime, I was still studying financial economics at the Erasmus University. My parents fortunately came back into the company and gave me the opportunity to just focus on the studies. And then when I
came back from the US, they were able to fix everything afterwards.
Exactly. Yeah.
Two teenagers. What are you guys doing here?
No, it was actually, I'm super proud still, especially my brother. We managed to get 20 to 25% increase in revenues in those years, just because we were actually set up the lunch delivery and the lunch catering on the side. And that, it gave us a bit of a taste of, innovation way up in driving revenues and great prosperity.
That's an amazing experience to have when you're that age.
Yep. And then unfortunately, JP Morgan called in 2005 and said, look, do you want to become a technology banker? I'm like, build my own website, run a small technology company there on the side. Why not? So I did 7 years of transaction banking, only to join fintech after that, and never to leave fintech anymore.
Great. Yeah. Great practice running a business during the pandemic as well. How has that shifted? You were operating for a few years before all this happened. How has that impacted like hiring, operating, the level of business, credit risk, the whole shebang there?
Great question. As this year has been transformational for Liberus and many small business funding companies, I would say. Since 2015, when I came in into Liberus and started running it, we've been focused on becoming an embedded finance platform. And we changed over partner by partner. At the beginning of the pandemic, we had about eight strategic partners that we were working with. And throughout the pandemic, it was incredibly clear that embedded business finance, but also being super quick on the ball in partnering with companies who serve these small businesses, that there was an enormous need for supporting small businesses with cash flow loans. Now, so what we did is we immediately reached out to a whole bunch of our partners and people that we were speaking to, over the past 12 months, we managed to onboard another seven new partners. So we basically doubled our partnership proposition, including into the UK and Europe. With several big strategic partners. Now they're all going to be announced in the next few months, so I can't tell you about those names yet. But those are the biggest a few of the biggest technology companies in the world that we're partnering with. What is really interesting is, whilst we know that banks and traditional lenders will undoubtedly not lend to small businesses over the next 2 to 3 years because they're all uncertain about what the impact is. We had the ability to adjust our algorithm within 2 hours of the announcement of the lockdown. So when the lockdown was announced in the UK, and I think it was the 19th of March, 2020, so almost exactly a year on the date, we managed to adjust our underwriting 2 hours and keep Liberus safe. So we saw a lot of great data coming in. We felt incredibly comfortable of keeping the doors open. So we kept funding our businesses throughout the pandemic. And we onboarded with seven new partners. Now, in the meantime, throughout the past 12 months, we've managed to up our credit criteria and tighten our credit criteria again, based upon what the UK government or all the governments announced throughout the companies that we operate. So being so quick on the ball as a fintech has really helped us keep, you know, both ourselves safe, but also keep funding our small businesses that need you know, need massive amounts of funding throughout the pandemic. And then from a company and people perspective, you know, I would lie if I say that you know, it was a smooth sailing. We had to make some tough choices on where to invest and which areas we should be focused on. But fortunately, you know, with the shareholders I have, which is Blenheim Chocolate and FTV Capital, they were very supportive of the strategy that we doubled down on, which is embedded finance with big partners. And we managed to hire an incredible amount of highly talented people who were let go by businesses that weren't as fortunate as us. We went from, I think we hired more than 20 to 25 heads in the last 2 months, and all incredibly high caliber people, you know, that we managed to onboard.
Excellent. Wow. That seems like a pretty significant growth. On the other side, though, there seems to be a lot of movement in the UK now to regulate embedded finance / buy now, pay later companies. Is that something that you're concerned with? And how do you think this will affect your business going forward?
The whole buy now, pay later is craze. It's basically, it's all consumer related. So if you look at consumer lenders like Klarna, like Affirm in the US, it's a brilliant model, but it basically takes away from the traditional credit card and store lending into an online journey with installment lending. So the same rules and regulations should be applied to Klarna and other installment lenders, buy now, pay later lenders, then it should be for credit card companies, which I think is quite fair. If you look at business lending throughout most jurisdictions across the world, business lending isn't regulated as consumers. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, business lending enables quite often higher revenues going forward. So if you are a consumer and you buy a pair of shoes, it's not going to make that the pair of shoes is going to, you know, alter your income. Your income is quite fixed. But if you're a small business and you borrow $10,000 to invest in stock or in online marketing or in you know, a bit more, maybe $50,000 to buy another shop, that actually expands your revenue capability and hopefully your affordability capability. So you're making a decision on enabling someone to increase their you know, their prosperity. That's very, very different from consumer lending. So there should also be very different rules for business lending versus consumer lending. Now, if you take that back to regulation over time, I am a strong believer that the regulation will weed out a whole bunch of the cowboys that we see in operating in the markets. Mm-hmm. You know, and especially in the US, the whole revenue-based finance has always had a pretty negative connotation because there were so many cowboys, you know, basically grinding small businesses' cash out of the business. And I think that's the very big difference that's happening right now, which is, with revenue-based finance and embedded business finance, you see good actors, good companies doing exactly what it's meant to do, which is enabling greater prosperity for small businesses by making solid and fair lending decisions. And you know, the likes of PayPal, PayPal Working Capital, Stripe, the Stripe Treasury platform, Square Capital, they all are doing small business finance through revenue-based lending, revenue-based finance. And enabling small businesses to, you know, to grow much, much faster. So taking that back to Liberus, from our data with our partners, and we've done over $800 million of lending, you know, $800 million of funding through 40,000 transactions. We can see that the average grow 20 to 30% faster than the businesses that we don't fund. And yeah, we've done some smart A/B testing on that. And not only that, there's a 20% higher chance of survival in the next 3 years versus the companies that we don't fund. So there's an incredible benefit of providing fairly priced and highly flexible finance to those small businesses in order to increase their prosperity.
Yeah, it kind of reveals that there's a gap in the market before a lot of these new players like yourself have come in to provide financing. We've seen that companies operating in lesser developed countries, you know, in Brazil and Mexico and Southeast Asia, that have done very well because the banks haven't met their needs, haven't focused their data to understand the markets and the particulars of the SMB market. So when I see your success, I see I see someone filling in a market need for companies to grow, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the global funding gap is estimated at over $5 trillion. I mean, that's, you know, 200 million SMBs globally cannot get access to the funding that they require in order to grow
enough,
their...
Big enough market for you?
No, it's a bit tiny. I was looking for a different market. So it's incredible. And if you look at the stats from banks and the stats from, you know, from, across the jurisdictions that we operate in, on average, from every 100 companies that apply for funding in a bank, only 20 to 25% actually get that funding. Whilst, you know, there's a humongous amount of those businesses that actually can sustain affordable funding, and which we prove because our accept rate is approximately triple that. We are close to 75 to 80% accept rate on small businesses. Now, the other part there is, to access this market, you need to meet those customers at the point of transaction or the point of where they are already part of an ecosystem. Because otherwise the cost of origination is just simply too large. What we do with that ecosystem is by offering it at the point of origination or at the point of interaction, we can keep the price relatively low because our cost of funding is directly linked to the commission that we pay to our partner, which is a lot less than originating these customers in the open market. And then second to that, we already know that from every customer that we originate or every 100 customers that we originate, we know that there's an 80% renewal rate. So we know that the demand for this product will keep coming and keep coming. And we call that the flywheel effect. Because we give a customer funding, they actually grow by, you know, up to 30% increase in transactions and revenues. We lower the default curves for those companies. Then there's an 80% renewal rate, a huge uplift in customer engagement from the partner, and they take out funding again. And that flywheel effect just keeps making them bigger and bigger with a much bigger impact on the UK or the US economy as well. And that's why this product is able to not only bring much better prosperity, but also address that funding gap much more accurate than a bank would be able to do.
Yeah, really shows that gap. Any other interesting fintechs in this area or technology that you find interesting lately?
I think the few areas that I find absolutely incredible is Stripe. We mentioned Stripe at the very beginning of this of the podcast. The business that they've built, two brothers from Ireland, together over the last 12 years, is incredible. And what Stripe is doing with Stripe Treasury, which is a single API to integrate with marketplaces, with e-com, with partners, enabling those small businesses to take out funding, to take out bank accounts, to take out other financial services through the Stripe platform in the background. That is the absolute epitome of what fintech should be standing for. And from the Ron Khalifa review here in the UK, which is recommendations for fintech. For the fintech industry to the government, I think one of the absolute most powerful sentences from that report is fintech is not a niche within financial services. Every single company is going to become a fintech at some point because of this this embedded finance wave that's happening. And if you look at the size of that market, from research from Andreessen Horowitz and Bain Capital, Matt Harris, has showed that embedded finance is estimated to be a 3.6 trillion market opportunity over the next 10 years. And of that, lending, so embedded lending is estimated to be a 1 trillion opportunity. That is a humongous amount of value creation over the next 10 years because of platforms like Stripe and hopefully companies like Liberus, the platform that Liberus is building. Interesting. If I look at the behemoths of fintech, Klarna, Stripe, Liberus takes a page out of their playbook by having developed a platform that can integrate with our partners, whether that's a marketplace, whether that's a merchant acquirer, whether that's an e-commerce platform. We can integrate with a single API, fund their small businesses, not only with revenue-based finance. We can also fund those customers with revenue-based finance, We can launch different products, like an e-commerce product or a brick and mortar product. But what is far more interesting is we can actually issue a bank account to those small businesses and almost offer banking as a service or banking out of the box for new startup businesses. And we can attach a card to that. So all of a sudden, through one single API integration, an e-commerce platform can have everything they need to start up a small business. You have the web shop online. You have the marketing capabilities online. You have your bank account in there. You have kind of an overdraft on the basis of revenue finance. We can offer a card, so you can actually go spend on that card. All of that through one single API without the platform taking any of the financial regulatory risk or any of the financial risk.
Any new developments in technology that would be applicable, would be helpful for you guys?
So we are on generation 3 of our machine learning underwriting engine at the moment. And we always strive on to have a world-class data analytics to make sure that we select the right customer, the right product at the right time. And through our data and analytics team, they're working on insights such as partner targeting, data handling, what pricing the NPV models hang around there, what are the latest volumes that they can target, and then of course all the campaign targeting. But what I'm really proud of is we're now on average we're making millions of eligibility decisions each month for our small businesses to guarantee that 80% approval rate. And the fourth generation of machine learning underwriting that we're doing is making use of internal performance metrics. So we're not using external bureau data anymore. We're using the internal performance metrics and the way that transactions happen, what areas, how many repeat customers, what can we deduct from that data? And we run that through our new neural network algorithm. And our team is now really focused on making that work and making it as predictive as our third generation underwriting algorithm. And that is incredibly powerful, because that means that we don't have to augment data with other data sources than the partner. And that means that our underwriting algorithms are as predictive as using that external data.
So what is the big obstacle? Obviously, you have a lot of big growth plans. You're moving into more countries. So is the hardest part like operational, regulatory, hiring people, funding? What's the barrier that you'd like to remove most in the next year or two?
There's for fintechs, I think worldwide, there's two big barriers. Number one will always be people. You need to have the right people, the right talent on board to operate and expand as rapidly as we do. And that is a combination of attracting the right people, but also retaining the right people. And this market is incredibly competitive at the moment. I mean, with players like Klarna and Stripe in the market, you will need to make sure that you're offering the right career opportunities and the right packages as well. So that's one. Number two, just in terms of operating and making sure that you the operational process and making sure that you can work with the partners in terms of developing the right customer journey, making sure that it's fully embedded into their ecosystem. And there's no handovers, no delays. There's there's sincerely a two-click experience. You click on the advert that says you are pre-approved within the ecosystem. You take out the money, or you select the money, and then you click, and money's in your account. And to get that all set up is it's quite a few operational processes that you need to go through. And then the third big one, of course, is regulatory, making sure that you jump all the right regulatory hoops have the right KYB, KYC compliance processes and products in your organization. And that's, for every fintech, that is a very big struggle.
Sure. Making things easy is actually a lot of hard work behind the scenes, for sure. And the easier you make it, the harder you have to work. So any advice for any former cheesemakers going into fintech out there?
I'd reckon, look, fintech is going to be one of the biggest waves over the next 10 years. As the research was saying, it's the fourth big wave is the embedded finance wave that is larger than mobile, the cloud, and the internet combined. So I would encourage people to go into fintech and wow the world in terms of how simple it can be to actually take out a credit card or set up an account or actually do the lending to small businesses. And like I said, the $5 trillion opportunity, it just indicates that there is a huge problem to be solved. And companies like Liberus are hopefully part of a solution over the next 10 years to provide as many small businesses with working capital as we can get through the door. So my encouragement would be find the gap, make sure you find the right backers and the right mentors around you, and ensure that you enjoy the journey, because the journey is relentless. And whether it's the pandemic that's thrown in your lap, or whether you are on your final £1 million of cash flow, you need to do another funding round. Only as a founder or only as a startup CEO, you probably realize that this job can consume you, and you need to have fun, because otherwise it's not worth it.
Right, exactly.
Pretty good advice.
Yeah, for sure. Well, keep up the good work, and thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks, Jan. Thanks, Steve. It was a pleasure being here, and hopefully more people get inspired to join fintechs.
Yeah, and join us on the Fintech Newscast. That's right. Yeah. That's Rob Strudoff, the CEO of Liberus. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news, and thank you for listening.